During your experience at that school, you were teaching the all black students. How did you find it difficult to relate to them?
To go back to when we lived in Birmingham, and as I said, I'm ashamed to say it now, but you know, at the time that went on, I thought, you know, we had to maintain our Southerns, the white supremacy in the South, and all. And I didn't see anything wrong with what was going on there. As I went to college and became educated, and in Jacksonville, of course, I associated with fellow black students, I think I did lose a lot of them. I think I began to develop a more sophisticated cosmopolitan view of the world. And I began to realize that you did have to judge people more by who they were and their education and their character than the color of their skin. But I still was not free of my prejudice. And when I taught in the black school in Birmingham, because I had only black students, I had to begin looking at them as individuals. I had to stop thinking of them as black or white students. All of them were black, and so I had to view them as individuals. And Mr. John Norman, our principal, I think he drove home to me what it was like to have been a black person living in the South more than anybody or anything ever has at a faculty meeting one day. I don't know why we were discussing this, but he began telling them his experiences when he'd gotten his undergraduate degree in Alabama. But to get a graduate degree, there was no black school in Alabama that offered a graduate degree, so he had to go to Columbia University in New York City to get a graduate degree. And he was married and had some children at this time. So he would teach school in the school year, and then in the summers he would pack up his wife and his children, and they would go to New York, and they would spend the summers up there, and he worked on his master's degree, and then later he got a doctorate. But he said that he remembered what it was like when they would be traveling from Birmingham to New York. They had to carry enough food to cover the whole trip, because finding a restaurant or any kind of food establishment that would serve black people, he just wasn't going to risk his family, you know, his children being hungry because they couldn't find them. So they had to carry enough food to last them till they got to New York. I think they had relatives who lived there, and they stayed with them during the summer when they went to bed. And they had to sleep in the car if they were not lucky enough to find a motel. There were just no motels run by black people then, or for black people. And I mean, he wasn't telling this for sympathy or anything. He was relating it as a matter of fact thing. But it drove home to me, here is a man who is one of the most intelligent men I've ever known, who is one of the finest Christian men I've ever known, who had a college degree and was a school teacher, and he had to endure these kind of indignities, simply because of the color of his skin.
He did it anyway.
He did it anyway to get the degree. And I think that brought home to me how terrible those segregation laws were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up until that time, I had just looked upon it as, you know, part of life, and that's the way things are. But at that point, I began to realize that it's a wonder that the black people had endured all they had done up until that time. And it's really a miracle that we did not have a racial war in this country. And had it not been for Dr. Martin Luther King and the nonviolent movement, I don't know what would have happened. But thank the Lord, a person like him was leading the movement, and it did stay nonviolent, and changes were made. And maybe it's because enough people, like myself, will open their eyes to what it was really like and how terrible it was. And so from that point on, I think I made great progress at being at losing and getting rid of a lot of my prejudice.
Were your students defensive
towards
you at first?
No, I suppose it's because they had been going to these schools for years, and they were used to, because as I said, every school in Birmingham had to have 50% white teachers and 50% black. So they had been, all the time they had been in school, they had had white teachers, I suppose. And the, I did learn, in that experience, I saw one thing that I still believe in. I'm not sure I understand it even today. I taught in this school for 1 year, and then I transferred to West End High School, which was only 3 or 4 blocks from where we lived on in the west part of Birmingham. Mm-hmm. Because I told Mr. Norman when I interviewed for the job, I said, "Mr. Norman, if a school opens up on the, can I transfer?" He said, "I'll let you transfer at the end of the school year, but I won't let you transfer in the middle." I said, "No, I don't want to do that." I said, "I'll teach through the school year." But when the next school year started, I did transfer to West End High School, which at that time was 95% black. I had a few white students. Hayes High School at that time had no white students at all. But West End was still in a neighborhood that was somewhat in transition.
What year was
I taught there from 86 through, not 86, from 76 through 80. I taught 1 year at Hayes High School and 4 years at West End High School. And the first year I was there, I taught all ninth grade English. And then the next year, I taught ninth and tenth grade English in some of the speech and drama classes. Mm-hmm. And then the last 2 years I was there, I taught tenth grade English and speech and drama.
Did you have conflicts with your white and black students that you can recall of? Any type of,
No.
Altercations that made you uneasy?
No. The only altercations we ever experienced was, as I said, you wouldn't have one or two white students in the whole class, but most of them were black, one black student against another. Now, I'm not saying that there was never any confrontation between white and blacks, but the blacks were such a, the white students did not, they just, I don't recall any. To me, the most difficult situation to teach in is probably still, even today, is still one where you've got almost an equal balance of students. Because then there's the constant friction as to who's going to be the dominant group. Mm-hmm. As long as one group is pretty much predominant, I think the minority group, whether it's the white or the black students, kind of just goes along. But in the schools where you've got the balance, that's probably where there's still the most conflict to see who's going to dominate.
So where did you stay there until 80?
We moved from there in June of 80. And as I said, teaching in those schools made me learn to look upon those students as truly individuals. I can still, one of the finest ladies I've ever taught with was the head of our English department there, Miss Barbara Chapman. She was one of the best teachers I've ever known. She reminds me a lot of Oprah Winfrey. She looks like Oprah. She could have been an Oprah Winfrey. But I loved her dad. I don't think I've ever worked for anybody I loved as much as I did Miss Jenna. And she was a black teacher. But they were white English. I had a great group of teachers I worked with in the English department there. I was black, I was white. And I really enjoyed it. But I can still remember even the names of some of those students. I taught two boys, Jerry and Terry Adams. They were twin brothers. I had them for ninth grade English, 10th grade English, and then in 11th, 12th grade, they were in my drama and speech classes. So I taught them all 4 years like I do the children here at this school. And they became like my children, like these do. And I loved them to death. I would trust them anything, anywhere. I had a girl named Patricia Jackson who won first in the state in solo acting, doing the scene of Mama from Raising in the Sun. I went to drama meets. I stayed at that school till 5:30 and 6 o'clock till dark, many nights working on drama projects. I was never afraid. I was never fearful. Those students accepted me just like I was one of them. When we'd win something in a drama production, they'd hug my neck, we'd jump up and down and cry together. They were my children, just like these white children that I teach now. And I still, I'd give anything to be able to know where they are today and talk to them and see them, because I love them just like I do this. And I think that's probably one of the best things that ever happened to me, because it did teach me to look upon students as individuals, regardless of their race, color, background, or whatever,
You could pretty much say that Birmingham, the experiences you had in Birmingham were your transition into the way that you opened your eyes kind of an awakening towards
yes as I said, I went to in Michigan now in an integrated society, but I was too young and just was not aware of all the social implications that went with it. And by the time I got old enough to become aware of it, I was back in Alabama in a predominantly white society. So therefore, I adopted many of the prejudices that we associate with our society. But the experiences that I went, and the experiences, it was not the civil rights movement itself that changed me, because if anything, that probably made me more prejudiced, because I was still, it was still very much them against us. But when I was put into a situation where I was the minority, and I worked with totally blacks, I began to view them as individuals, and I began to see they're human, that everybody is a human being, and it does not make any difference. The color of our skin is not what determine what you think of a person. It's got to be the character and the kind of person they are. Now, remember, while we were doing this, we went to my husband pastored a church in Birmingham that was, of course, still all white. As I say, probably the most segregated part of our society today is still the churches. But that's by choice. But I still went to a white church. I was the pastor's wife at a white church. And they felt so sorry for me because I had to teach at that all-black school. You know, poor mama. Yeah. And a lot of times I just did not, they would say something. I'd say, oh, it's fine. I enjoy it. I did not try to argue with them and change their viewpoint. But one time we were in conversation about a family in the church that, I guess you'd say, they're poor white trash. they were members of the church, but they were the kind, they only came to church when they wanted something. And if they had any kind of emergency, they expected the pastor to be there, but they didn't come to church. And they expected, if the power was about to get cut off, they expected the church to take up a collection and pay their power bill. I mean, they were just the kind of people, they used the welfare system and they used Christian people, and played on our sympathies and so forth. And I won't call their name. But someone was saying something one time about my having to work for Mr. Norman, a black principal and so forth. And I did say, well, if I had to decide who I was going to live beside, who I wanted to move in as my next door neighbor, I had certainly rather have Dr. Norman and his family living there than this family. And I don't mention the name. And that was absolutely the truth. Because by that time, I had realized that education and socioeconomic standards are what separate people much more than race. And I still believe that today. And when I talk to these students here at Spring Garden, who are all white students, and many of them have very prejudicial viewpoints, many of them are your typical rednecks. Mm-hmm. And I try to do what I can to overcome that. And I try to, when they make remarks or use racial slurs or make remarks that indicate they are judging people by their race rather than, I try to give them my standard lecture, in which I go through and explain some of my life experiences. But I do tell them, I say, I learned in those experiences that if you're going to classify people, I don't classify them in two ways. I classify them in four. You have white people, and you have black people, and you've got the N-word people, and you've got white trash. And if I had rather live or be associated with intelligent, educated, honest, decent black people than many of the white people that I know. So I have, in my experiences in teaching now, maybe I've grown to that extent, and I hope I can influence my students to judge people by their character and how they live their lives and how they treat other people rather than the color of their skin or their nationality or even what region of the country come from. We have people in this area who think they come from the north. They're Yankee. You're strange. I have, that's kind of a problem in this little school with everything, not just black people. Anything that's strange or different is inferior, and I'm trying to tell them, hey, just because something is different does not mean it is less valuable. It's just different, and you have to learn to accept that. And many of them who go to college come back, and I notice a great difference. Thank goodness.
So in 1980, did you get what brought y'all back to Cherokee County?
Yes, we lived in Birmingham, and my husband pastored, as I said, a church in Birmingham for 4 years. And then we just decided we did not want to be in the full-time ministry. There are a lot of problems associated with being full-time. Your family's welfare and income and everything depends on the whims of the board of deacons. And so he just decided he did not want to be in the full-time pastor anymore. So he resigned his church and went into secular employment. And I kept, of course, was teaching school. And we went through some other personal crises during this time. But anyway, this little church that we had pastored in Cherokee County for 5 years before, mm-hmm. East Center Baptist Church, was without a pastor. And they knew that my husband had resigned his church, so they called and asked if he would come just fill the pulpit. And so he came one Sunday, and then they asked him if he'd consider doing it on an interim basis. And at that time, he was not going to go back and pastor it at all. And so he said, well, okay. So we came back, because these were people we'd lived with and been associated with for 5 years. They were like family. We'd always maintained contact with them. So we drove up forth on the weekends. And